During this hour, Focus 588, we'll talk with someone who has for some time been helping people learn how to successfully mingle. Susan Rowan is a communications coach, in-demand keynote speaker, and author of the best-selling book, How to Work a Room, The Ultimate Guide to Savvy Socializing in Person and Online, recently published in paperback by Quill. In the book, Susan Rowan describes the roadblocks that keep us from being our outgoing best in social and business situations and offers practical advice about how to meet new people, how to develop contacts, and how to establish connections that build personal and professional relationships. We'll try to solve that for you talk about the issues involved during this hour. If you would like to join the conversation, you can call us with your questions. The number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL, if that makes it easier to remember. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. Again, around Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL. Toll-free anywhere else, 800-222-WILL. A little bit more about Susan Rowan. She is the author of the book we'll be discussing, How to Work a Room. She also has a couple other best-selling books, What Do I Say Next? And The Secrets of Savvy Networking. And she is an alumnus of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. So we're glad to have her back in this area, even though it is by telephone from Marin County. Susan Rowan, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us.
Oh, I'm delighted. I mean, I'm getting back on campus without the cold weather.
Right. Best of all possible worlds.
That's what I thought. You know, in fact, it's so interesting is I've been on WILL before, but the last time I came to campus, the gentleman who was the cab driver pointed out where PAR was, where I originally lived.
Uh-huh.
And it was very interesting, and I said to him, oh, that's PAR. I used to live there. And he said, I had no idea that the dorm was that old.
Oh, man, that is cold.
Yeah, but I thought, you know, everyone says funny things that they don't mean to turn out that way. He recouped like we all can when we're working any room or cab.
Did he realize suddenly that he had just put his foot in his mouth? Or?
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
But I started to laugh because I go, you know, people like me look for material like that, and
uh-huh.
all we have to do is really listen, and it's one of the lessons in the book. You know, people say very funny things. It's just if we're listening, we will be attuned to what they're saying instead of worrying about what we're going to say next.
That's a really interesting point. I want to certainly get into listening and conversational issues like that. I just wanted to start out, though, with a sort of a basic question, something you raise at the beginning of the book. I'm sorry?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. You say that even as communications technology has increased, social skills are declining.
Oh.
How so and why?
Well, you know, when I first started doing my speaking and writing about how to work a room, Dr. Philip Zimbardo, who's one of the premier psychologists in the shyness world, his research showed 80% of us self-identify as shy. Jack, it is 15 years later. It's now 93% of us. He attributes the change to technology. He says we're losing that day-to-day social skill. You know, the conversation with the teller when we now think that our money comes out of a hole in a wall. That's where our kids think it comes out of anyway. We're losing that interaction. People are ordering their groceries online. They're ordering their books online. We're losing day-to-day niceties. And so many people are spending so much time online that they're not doing as much face-to-face because they now have online communities, and it doesn't necessarily translate to the face-to-face opportunity. So, yeah, we're losing some of our social skills. And let's face it, some of us were raised with a different set of manners, as evidenced by cell phone abuse. I'm sure it's the same in Champaign-Urbana as it is in every other city.
I'm sure that's the case.
You know, though, I have to admit the time I heard a cell phone go off in a funeral mass, I was so shocked that I couldn't believe it. Then I found out it's happened to other people who've been in those kind of circumstances. They've heard cell phones go off. And I'm thinking, what is wrong with us? Have we lost our minds? It's really bad behavior.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we think that just because we can communicate from anywhere that maybe, you know, we should or have to or something.
That's a great way to say it, Jack. You know what? Just because we can doesn't mean we should.
Yeah.
I may have to quote you.
Well, that'd be okay.
Okay.
You know, we actually have a listener already ready to talk with us.
Great.
And I'm sure that, you know, you and I could take the whole hour, but I do want to defer to callers. So
perfect.
Let's talk with a listener. And where are they calling from? I should check here in a second. This is someone in Champaign on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hello. My name is Linda. I don't have any trouble speaking to people who are strangers to me. What I have difficulty with is maintaining a short conversation. So if I'm at a cocktail party, for example, I'll get stuck talking to one person. So I'd like to know, how do I politely end a conversation so I can move to someone else? I've tried the, I need to get a drink, but one can only have so many drinks.
Right, and you know, actually, Linda, that is the number one question I've been asked over these 18 years that I've talked about the topic. How do we extricate? Because we were taught it isn't nice to leave people. By the way, the how to work a drink, according to old etiquette, you're supposed to ask the person if they'd like a refresher, too. So you don't need to use that. Well, there are a couple of ways. One way is if you're having a great conversation with someone and you observe that it's time to end, either by observing them or your own need to move on, what you do with the same upbeat voice is you extend your hand for a handshake, because not only does that signal the beginning introduction, it also signals the close.
Mm-hmm.
Extend your hand for the introduction saying, oh, and you summarize what you talked about. Oh, it was so nice to talk about, Champaign Urbana's, parking problem. I'm sure you don't have any there, but whatever it was you talked about. And you could say, do you have a card? And if they don't ask for one back, you could say, may I offer you one of mine? And I hope our paths cross again. And then what you do is, because you're not going to lean into that handshake, you're going to be a little bit more outside of that handshake. So it's not like you're leaning in to be a greeting. Then what you must do in any case is walk at least a quarter of the room away from the person. If you excuse yourself and stay in the same physical area, that's very uncomfortable for the other person. That's not our purpose. Mm-hmm. Go over to another person, another group, but be as positive as you can. And, you know, people understand at a cocktail party you're not there to talk to someone the whole time.
Right.
So I hope that that helps. Now, do you want to hear what to do if you really haven't liked talking to the person?
Sure.
Okay, this is the best. If you're talking to someone and they seem distracted, disinterested, et cetera, first of all, we need to know it could have nothing to do with us. They may have just gotten bad news right before they came, and they are really thinking about something else. Because we never know, what we don't want to do is behave inappropriately. So what you do is the same upbeat tone of voice, the same extended handshake, but you don't say, I had a great time talking to you. What you say is, oh, I hope you enjoy the rest of the party.
Okay.
Or the conference, or the meeting, or the reunion. And then you still walk a quarter of the room away.
Mm-hmm.
Because that way, you never know, the next time you meet the person, instead of them thinking, oh, well, she was so rude to me, because they'll never think they were rude first.
Right.
This way, you've been as positive and upbeat as you possibly can, and you wish them to have a good time, so how bad could that be?
Right. Okay, thank you very much.
Good. Thanks very much for the question. I always have to ask these meta questions to start with. Why is the ability to socialize with strangers so important?
Because, let me sound like my grandmother, and everybody's going, you never know. That's my new marketing theory for the 21st century. You never know. Strangers are people who know things we want to know. They may have, you may want to, start kayaking. That might be the person that has a friend who is an expert kayaker. Talking with strangers, we really need to have networks of people in our personal and social lives that support us. I am happy to tell you that my friends from the campus, and it was a whole lot of years ago.
Couldn't have been that long.
Oh, bless you for saying it. I know I fished for that one, and people think I'm not an outdoors person.
I was a little slow, actually.
I know. You know what? But I'll forgive you because it's okay. You know what? Those are still my friends, and it is 30 years later. So really, you can't have the benefits of really the most prosperous life of friends and good things happening if you don't have a network. Some of the strangers you may meet may end up being the next person that hires you, may end up being your golfing buddy, could end up being a friend, a client. You just don't know. So life is better. It's like the random acts of kindness. When we do and say nice things to people that we don't know, it makes us feel good.
Well, here the other thing that seems to me from reading your book that you talk about is the idea we go into a convention or a cocktail party or some something we got invited to, we don't know anybody. It might just be possible to have fun there.
Oh my goodness, did I forget to say that? You know what? That is the bottom line, and you know, the most magnificent minglers, the people that really know how to work a room, every one of our listeners can name someone like that, and that person always looks like they're having a great time. And what do? We gravitate to the person that looks like they're having a great time, because who walks into a room and says, oh my gosh, there's a boring, unhappy person I want to meet? You know, you want to go to the person having a great time. So here's what we need to do. Get ourselves in the mindset that we're going to have a good time. And if you want to enter a group of people and you see everyone's already in groups, go over to the group that's being loud and laughing. Because A, that's a group that's going to be more open to you, and B, that's the group you're going to have fun with. But everywhere you go with the intent to have fun, and the room works you.
Do you think that anyone can be good at this, though? I mean, aren't there some people that are simply gifted at socializing and others perhaps, you know, the opposite?
You know, I wouldn't be a former teacher if I didn't think we can't teach that skill and people couldn't learn that skill. There are some people who are gifted, but you know what I've noticed, having written How to Work Room 12 years ago, speak about it all over the country? The people that are really great at it, Jack, they don't even know they're doing it. What they're just doing is meeting people, having a good time. They're not the people going, oh, today I'm there to work a room. They're just going somewhere to enjoy themselves, to make connections, to have a couple good conversations. And that's the other part of it. We go somewhere, and how we come back feeling we've had a good time is if we've had some great conversations. And I think that's what the savvy socializers do. Can we learn it? Yes. Yes, yes, yes. I'm happy to say, you know, 350,000 books in the United States, and I know there are people that have gotten some tips, but here's the other thing I'd say to our listeners. When I researched 100 of the best conversationalists that I thought were, like, way out there on socializing, do you know 75% of them still said they were shy?
Mm-hmm.
I was astonished, but what they also said is they're shy, but they push through it because they know they have to and because they really like people.
Very interesting. Well, we have another listener calling, and let's talk with them. This is someone in Clifton on line number 4. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Yes, good morning, folks. And I'd like to know what your person has to say about people that use vulgarities and profanities and foul language. And it's one thing that really irritates me. And there's another thing that irritates me, and that's the YK syndrome. I'm not going to tell you what that is, but maybe you'll figure it out. But I despise that. I'd rather they go and or ah or ah and what like that than.
Well, you know.
Huh?
Well, you know.
Yes, and your guest today is guilty of it.
Well, I'm guilty of it too. So
yeah, well, I just it conveys nothing to me, and I just don't like hearing it. But the one thing about the foul language, I can't even go into a restaurant in the small villages around here where I live without listening to this, and as a result, I just try to refrain from going. And I wish that people would realize this is vulgar. This is. This infringes. They if you say anything to them about it, well, they say, well, it's a free country. We got free speech. But they don't realize that free speech is not a license to impose their vulgarities on other folks. So anyway, I'll see what you have to say about it. I'll listen a little while. Maybe you want to ask me something.
Okay, thanks.
I doubt it.
Well,
I guess I should start with, you know. But
I don't know, ma'am.
I heard me do that. Yes, I.
And I don't know, and I just despise that.
Yeah. Well, I. How about let's answering the one about the vulgarities in terms of working a room, and you know what? Let me do it two ways. Let me say, when you're meeting people that you don't know and it's not part of your conversation, the best advice is absolutely do not use vulgarities, especially in a business situation and even in a social one.
Yeah.
That presumes something that we have no right to presume. And it, for people that find that very difficult to listen to, you know, you don't know if that's going to be your next client, your next boss. You don't want to do that. So I'm with you on that completely. The other aspect is the people that sometimes use foul language in email, which is the online room, and that is absolutely verboten because what we say is one thing, but in print it almost screams things to a higher decibel. So I'm with you. I think when we are meeting people we don't know and in social situations, we should really refrain from language. And that even includes jokes that could be offensive.
Yeah.
Thank you for bringing that up. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for your call.
You're welcome, and I'll probably call some other time.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, I'm quite sure that you'll catch me saying you know from time to time. It's just one of those things that you fill space with while your brain tries to engage your mouth or something.
I'd be actually, to tell you the truth, I would be more inclined to say, well, you know what I mean, instead of the that I find more irritating. Actually, being a speaker, we will be more comfortable with you know than listening to someone do the ums. That's another thing. I have a chapter in the book in How to Work a Room called How to Work an Audience, and if we can eliminate those, we're in good shape. But it's an interesting thought. Well,
yeah.
Do we have any more callers, or can we...
At the moment, let's proceed full speed ahead.
Okay, we'll just schmooze.
Okay. Let me ask you then to review some of the basics when you're trying to say to yourself, okay, I need to get better, get more savvy at socializing in the situations that I find myself in. But there are some roadblocks that people commonly experience, things that we've sort of been taught about talking to strangers and so forth. I wonder if you could talk about that a bit.
Oh, yeah. I identified a number of roadblocks. These are roadblocks that stop us. So what we want to say to our listeners is, when you're going to a holiday party, when you're going to a meeting, when you're going to a convention, you could even be going to an alumni event at the U of I, or maybe it's even a PTA meeting. What happens is you walk into a room, besides the fact that we now are 93% shy, at least according to our own self-evaluation, first roadblock is we were taught don't talk to strangers. Of course that makes sense. It does not make sense when we're at a holiday party, a friend's wedding, a meeting, a conference. So that's one roadblock. Another roadblock is we were taught that we should have a proper introduction. Well, most of the times there's nobody to do that, so we really need to have a remedy, and the remedy to that is everywhere you go, have a 7 to 9 second prepared self-introduction that you key to the event. How you might introduce yourself at the Chamber of Commerce might be very different than at a friend's party. The third roadblock is that we were taught that good things come to those who wait. They do not trust me. Varicose veins come to those who wait with lots of gray hair. The Rowan version, good things come to those who initiate. If you go over to someone who's not talking to anyone, you may find the most interesting person there that you end up becoming friends with, and isn't that the best reason? Another roadblock is, and it's one that we should really take seriously, is we don't want to be misinterpreted. There's so much going on now, is if you go over to someone, are they going to think it's a pass, etc. So sometimes we refrain from doing it, and the truth is we can be friendly, we just have to be appropriate. And then the fifth roadblock is the fear of rejection, because that's overall what the issue is. We don't want to be rejected, so we don't give people the chance. The truth is, if someone rejects us in a room of 100, there are 99 other nice people. You just go over to one of those other people. That pretty much summed it up, huh?
Yeah, that's very good. And, you mentioned the topic of introductions, and I'm I'm thinking to myself, this is an interesting sort of cultural phenomenon, because it used to be a much more formal process where people were introduced and there was someone whose role it was, the host or hostess or maybe some other people. They'd have greeting committees that would make sure that people were properly introduced. That has sort of been just completely dropped.
Well, you know, if you really think about, and I ask the readers in the book, think about who the best hosts you know are. And when you think about the best hosts that you've been at one of their parties, the number one thing that people say that great host does, besides have good food,
yeah,
is introduce you to other people. And it's not just, hey, Joe, meet John. It's with some information that the two of you might have in common to help start the conversation. It's a wonderful skill, and I will say this. In Secrets of Savvy Networking, I had a chapter called Networker, Networker, Make Me a Match.
Mm-hmm.
The best of hosts are great networkers. They're really great matchmakers, and it's that introduction. But so many places we go, there's nobody to introduce us, so we really need to feel the confidence that we know what we're going to say about ourselves. 7 to 9 seconds, it's not a 30-second commercial, in spite of some of the networking groups who might have told you that. And it's upbeat. And it's engaging, because we want people to feel they want to speak to us, not just be bored by our 30 seconds.
And you suggest that that we tell people something about what we do rather than our title, for example.
Right. You know, in fact, it's even, Jack, even give the benefit of what you do. I met a gentleman when I was writing What Do I Say Next. He was in the coffee shop every day. I knew what I was doing. I was writing. And I wondered, how could he be here every morning at 7:30? And I happened to ask him one day, what do you do? And he deadpan looked at me and said, Susan, I help rich people sleep at night. I looked at him. I was so engaged. He said, oh, you must be a pharmacist. Well, the truth was, he was a financial planner.
Right.
But what a smart way. He was engaging. He was droll. It was fun. And it got me thinking. And it started our conversation and a friendship.
Very good. We have another listener to talk with. Let's do that. And this is someone in Urbana on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi. Thinking about introductions, I think about all the times I want to introduce people, and suddenly I can't remember their name. The name won't come to my mouth.
Oh.
And so what I try to do when I'm the person who needs to be introduced is I just give my name and extend my hand and take the onus off the other person who's obviously standing there. There's this little pause, and you can tell they're trying to get that name to come to the surface. And I'll also do that if I see somebody in the store or something, and I know that I know them, but I can't think of their name, and I can't always think of mine, so I just say, hi, I'm Susan, you know, or whatever. And it helps a lot. I think it might help all of us, given how many people so many of us have run into over our lives. There's a lot of names back there. It's kind of hard to come up with the right one. I really admire the people who have that sort of memory that can do that.
Yeah, but they don't know where they put their keys.
Right.
And you just gave, if you haven't read Out of Work Room, I'm surprised, because you just gave the key. And I've said it in both the original version and this version. You are so smart. You know, when we're struggling with someone's name, we have to know they're struggling with our name, too. And if you always put out your hand and say your name, 90% of the people will then say theirs. And then nobody's struggling with the name. You take the, like you say, the onus off the person, and then the conversation could proceed. I think if everyone would do what you would do, it would help us all. I think that's a great idea. And let's tell everyone, from now on, you have to do what the Susans just told you. Always say your name.
The other thing I wanted to say was to the gentleman who called earlier about being offended by vulgar language and curtailing where he goes. I've seen a number of people doing that, and it seems a real shame to let choice of words get in the way and to limit our experience in life. And I think as we get older and as people move or people die off, limiting our social experiences and our contact with the outside world is not a cool thing to do. It's not a healthy thing to do.
Oh, I would agree, and you said the magic word, healthy. One of the things that's been really interesting is how much research is done on people who have social networks and how it positively impacts their health. And, you know, that's one of the things they do, like, with older people. It's the people that have the good health, if you look around, they're the people that have, they go out in public. They go out to things. They don't delimit themselves. So that's very good advice.
Thanks.
Good point.
Thanks very much for the call. We're right at our midpoint. Let me reintroduce our guest during this hour, Focus 580. We're talking with Susan Roane. Her last name, by the way, is spelled R-O, capital A-N-E. It's one word, but first name Susan. And she's the author of several best-selling books, including What Do I Say Next?, The Secrets of Savvy Networking, and the one we're discussing this morning, How to Work a Room, The Ultimate Guide to Savvy Socializing in Person and Online, published by Quill in paperback. And this is a republished book of a hardcover book published ten years ago?
Yeah, it was hardcover initially, and then Warner had it out, and this is a totally updated and revised. And even if you have the old book, this has four new chapters, the techno toy room, the virtual room, the diverse room, and how to work an audience. I told friends, for $14, for three chapters, couldn't even get sushi for that kind of money. It's worth it.
Good point.
Sushi's expensive here.
Right. More so here, probably.
Yeah.
Well, we welcome other questions. We have one listener waiting and have some lines open if you'd like to join us around Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL. Toll-free anywhere you hear us, 800-222-WILL. Let's talk with a listener in southeastern Illinois on line number 4. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Thank you. I wasn't in the room all the time, so you may have mentioned this and I just missed it, but there was a rule from the more formal days that Mr. Brighton was talking about that seems to have been forgotten in these more informal days, and that rule was, the roof is the introduction.
Oh, what a great line. That's great.
Well, I didn't think it up. It was around for years. It's a very old line.
The roof is the introduction.
Roof is the introduction.
And that's, wow. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tell me your name.
No, it's okay.
I can't take credit and say that I said it because I went to Illinois and they didn't let you do it. They call that plagiarizing.
It's not original. It was a rule.
I'll just say it's an old rule that I heard from a very nice person in Champaign-Urbana.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks very much for that pithy quote. I assume this means that you're under the same roof, so you're no longer strangers?
Yes, so you're in the same room. It's so interesting because that's really a very underscoring what my point is. You're in the same room. If you're in the same room, you have something in common.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's the event, whether it's the venue, whether it's you're standing at the buffet table, there's something to talk about. What you've been invited to a party, you have to know the host or the hostess, so there's something or someone to talk about. It's a very nice way of getting to the capsule countdown of what the whole process is. And, that's what people wonder, Jack. They wonder, what am I going to talk about?
Mm-hmm.
Well, talk about the food. My personal favorite is, if it's a buffet, I go where the dessert table is.
Mm.
I always found at the vegetable table, it's never as lively. So I'm going over to the chocolate desserts. Have had some great times talking to people around buffet table. It's the thing you have in common. That's why most great social occasions, it's really about great food. That's what people talk about. And then they move from the food, the venue, the weather, the parking, the traffic, and then they move, after they've developed some rapport, to some of the bigger issues that they might want to talk about, whether it's business or politics or whatever the purpose of the event is. But you have to establish that small talk to get to know people first, so you earn big talk.
I think this is something that a lot of people feel. I have often felt small talk is really nothing, that it's not important or it's not substantial enough to really base a conversation on. But you say that's not the case at all. It's part of a process of forming a connection with someone.
That is exactly. The other interesting thing about those 100 conversationalists that I interviewed, while 75% said they were still shy, 100% of the ones that I thought were great conversationalists, not one of them denigrated small talk. The main thrust was, small talk. That's the way I get to know people. And I'm interested in people, so that's the way I get to make connections. The people who are good at small talk never put it down. And they have, the different spin on it. They see it as a way to get to know people. How do you know who has two kids? How do you know whose mother goes to the same manicure as your mother goes to? How do you know someone who also likes ballet? How do you know someone who's a member of the board of the Cranard Arts Center? I mean, if you don't talk to people, you don't find this out. You might find a tennis partner. You might find, you know, the next job. But if we're not talking to people, we don't know what we have in common. Small talk is the biggest talk we do.
We have two callers waiting. Let's get on next to the listener on a car phone, apparently.
Ooh.
On line number one, and not sure where they are, but hello, you're on Focus 580.
Hi. I've got a couple things to just comment on. But first, the question is, I'd like to hear some suggestions for questions to ask people when you're trying to get to know them. And the comments I have, I like to dance. I tango. Yeah. It's
wow.
It is so much fun. Mm-hmm. And I found it's a good way to overcome shyness because I'm so interested in the dancing that I'm not thinking about, you know, impressing people other than maybe with my dancing. But I want to dance. And so another thing is that when you tangle, you have to think about tangling. You can't be chattering away. So maybe that's sort of against what you're talking about, but in a way, it's a good way to break the ice with someone. Another thing about tango is that you do learn a lot about other people's character and their personality when you dance with them. Just the way they react to the situations that you're involved in, like if someone's blocking the path when you're dancing, or if they're short-tempered with you, or if they're congenial and very understanding when you make a mistake. You know, you just sort of feel the other person that way. And one last comment, and then I'll hang up, that I've gotten in the habit when I go out of town, I always look up the tango place, because it's a good way to meet people. And at the last place I went, the men were all very happy to dance with me. And one man got my email, and he was writing me and saying, "You have such a forthright character." And I thought about it. I was like, I have a forthright character? And I think it was because I was encouraging to him. He was a beginner. And it's always good to encourage other people. They won't keep dancing if you don't help them. And I was telling him, you know, what he was doing well. I just said, you know. Anyway, my encouragement of him helped me to meet him. And it really, I don't know that I have such a forthright character, but you just sort of trying to keep things in a positive way and letting the other person know you're thinking about them and not just yourself. So I'll hang up now. Maybe you can answer my question. Thanks.
Good. Thanks for the call.
Well, you said some wonderful things. First of all, we have a wonderful play here in San Francisco called The Last Tango that's been running for a long time. If it ever comes to your area, be sure to see it. Second of all, the idea of dance. I don't know if you're single, but one of my very good friends and colleagues met her current, shall we say, gentleman caller because she dances, I think it's salsa, but up in Santa Rosa. So dance is a wonderful way to meet people, and it's a wonderful way to learn about them. And you do have conversations, and you do have something in common. And shy people, you said it's a great way to overcome shyness. But you know what else? If you're not a particular dancer, a lot of acting classes are recommended to shy people. Even some shy children are taking acting. It's very helpful. And when I watch the Actors Studio, most of the very famous actors say that they went into acting because of shyness. So I think doing something about it is wonderful. And some questions to ask people. Let me just share this with you. A lot of people ask questions, but the best conversationalists also add something to it, more than just asking questions. If we ask too many questions, it's a grilling. I said in What Do I Say Next and repeated it in How to Work Room, you bring your OAR, O-A-R, observations, asking questions, and revealing something about yourself. But some opening questions might be, is this the first time you've been to this event? Have you been to this venue before? If you're a member of the organization, have you found it to be helpful? But even more so is the open-ended, how have you found it to be helpful? Also, something else. If someone is wearing something that looks interesting, a tie, a pin, make a comment. And what I like that you said is, when you say something about what someone is doing well, they, of course, will think you're wonderful, because so many people, all they hear is what they do wrong, that the person who notices what they do right is worth everything. So keep on doing that, and we should all take a lesson from you. It's a wonderful gift.
Do you suggest that people wear interesting ties or pins or so forth to start a conversation?
Yes. Yeah. You know what? Here's what I always wear a pin, and very often it's a star pin, not because I think I'm a star, which, of course, is to a degree true with all the little egomaniacs that we are. But it's because I'm a former teacher, and every time I send a letter, I put a gold star on it, because you can't break some habits, right?
Yeah.
So I wear stars. But I bought my brother, also an Illinois grad, the big Three Stooges fan. He's an attorney. I bought him a tie that Mo, Curly, and Larry, and it says, "Do we cheat him and how? Attorneys at law."
Right.
And he wears it. People will come over to him, because when you wear a fun tie, what you're saying is, "I'm approachable." When you're wearing the serious tie that might be appropriate, it can sometimes keep people at a distance. So wear a fun tie, wear a pin. But here's the other part. When you see someone with a fun tie, a nice scarf, an interesting pin, an interesting sweatshirt, say something to them. They're giving you the opening line.
We have a couple of the calls, and I'll get right to, but speaking of opening lines, one thing I really liked that you said in the book was that we try to think of clever opening lines and often fall flat, but sometimes the best opening line is hi, and just being friendly.
Being friendly. You know, whenever I'm in a city, actually I took a nice aerobic walk all around campus when I was there to speak for the Biennial Women's Conference. It was so wonderful to see how wonderful campus looked. I was pumping away, walking really fast, but I said hello to everyone. I didn't know anyone, but every person on the path said hello back. So when you say hi or hello, people respond in kind. And with a big smile, that's the best opener, and they've actually done research on it. So don't worry about the clever opening line, because by the time you think of the clever line, the person walked past you. Just say hi or hello and always have a big smile on your face.
We have just about 10 minutes left with Susan Rowan. We're talking about her book, How to Work a Room, The Ultimate Guide to Savvy Socializing in Person and Online. We have a couple callers. We'd probably be able to take some more if you'd like to join us. 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Anywhere else, 800-222-9455. Let's talk with another listener in Pena on line number 2. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Good morning. I just wanted to comment about our social life. I was born in 1933, toward the end of the Victorian era, in a rural society. And when we gathered together, the women would gather into the kitchen with their talk of the food and babies and marriage and so forth. And the men would gather in the living room, or in good weather, they'd gather outside, maybe out by the barn, and we children would run in between and see what was going on, or just play among ourselves. And then, of course, along came World War II, which changed our structure. And I would like to comment, I taught for 38 years, and I noticed the changes. It kind of began along the about the time that President Kennedy was assassinated. And then we went into the hippie years, and it was very difficult to teach during those times, because the children would wear the flag on their seat, and they were going against rules. And I believe a part of our society, the way we talk to each other, goes by a set of rules, which I think we lost at the end of the Victorian era and after World War II, and then for sure we lost these rules during the mid-60s and into the 70s. And I think now we're recovering, because I still, even though I've been retired 8 years, I still help out the children in special ed, and they so want to talk to a person. They love, children are natural talkers, and I think we've got to recover our sense of a few rules of politeness, that they're not all that bad. And that's my comments. I'll hang up. Thank you.
Well, thanks for the
But he makes a very good point.
Yeah.
You know, it really is about being polite. We would want to teach our children to be polite. We would like people to treat us in a polite way. I think being polite and being kind and being nice, you know, those are wonderful traits to have. And it is about conversation. You know, most people know how to say hello, but it's really what do we say that builds the conversation, that builds the relationship. But if we're not working rooms, we're not meeting people. And maybe let's rephrase what the title is. One of my friends, also an Illinois alum, said to me one day, Susan, you know what they should call your book? How to Make Nice in a Room. Because it is about meeting people and being nice and being interesting. And something else one of the listeners said, and being interested in them. That's one of the keys.
You say something in the book along those lines. If you don't really care about people, you won't go over because they'll know you really don't care.
Right. Oh, you won't go over. You know, people can, you know what dogs will do to you because they can get the sense immediately. You know, people know if you're, I call it overworking a room. We all know people that you can tell are working a room. That's not what this book is about. If you're overworking the room, then you're not working it right. It's really about going in, meeting people, having conversations, establishing rapport, connecting. You know, as now, everything they talk about is relationship, relationship, relationship. But it starts with that first hello and the conversation. People know if you're a phony. And here's what I even said. I said, if you don't like people, don't buy my book. Because everything that I say in it will look like a technique instead of something you can do. And maybe this is the hint we'll give to our listeners. Sometimes we're really self-conscious, Jack. So instead of thinking about yourself and your own, do I have spinach in my teeth? Is my tie straight? Is whatever. Think about the goal is to making other people comfortable with us. And if you focus the comfort question on the other person, the onus, again, will be off of you and you'll feel more comfortable.
Well, that makes a lot of sense because as uncomfortable as we might feel, there are probably other people there who feel even more uncomfortable.
Because right. They haven't heard us talk about it, how to make it better. So they're a little bit, and if, especially people who are extremely shy, this is really an uncomfortable thing to do. And I don't want to make too light of it, though. I think that I like to have a lighthearted interview. But, you know, if you've spent 35 years on the planet feeling shy and uncomfortable, it's going to take a few practices of this to make yourself feel more confident, but don't give up. Go to the parties. Go out in public. Go to the meetings. Go to book signings. Go to book clubs. You know, join a couple of groups in the areas of your interest. People are generally really nice, and you're going to meet nice people, and it's going to help you break the ice in other situations.
Well, very good. We have just about 5 minutes left, and we have our listener in Clifton back, I guess, would like to make another point or ask another question. Let's talk with him again. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. I just wanted to come in defense of myself. I've not gone and crawled in a hole when I hear the foul language. I just go somewhere else where I don't have to listen to it, or maybe somebody that's got better manners. And I guess I'm not afraid to meet people. I'm a commander of a VFW post, and if anybody at the meeting uses foul language, I'll just bring the gavel down and tell them, "Hey, we don't do that here." It'd be considerate of others. And also, I've been rather successful in signing up VFW members, and I think one thing we need to do, whether we're selling or whether we're visiting, we need to pay sincere, honest compliments. If I drive into somebody's driveway and they got some scraggly roses that look terrible, I don't go and say, "Well, those are nice pink roses." I maybe say, "Well, your petunias over here look nice," or something. Pay them a sincere compliment. And so anyway, I'm going to be doing things, and if this weather will settle down, I'm going out tomorrow and deliver 11 Christmas food baskets to some needy veterans. I was going to do it today, but the roads really aren't fit to get out on.
Right.
So anyway, I just wanted to come back and say, hey, I'm not crawling in any hole for anybody.
Not calling it quits on humanity yet.
What?
Not calling it quits on humanity yet.
I'm not calling it quits.
Okay.
I was born in 1923, 10 years before the last caller, I think it was. But, yeah, I think this young people, they mentioned young people. I think, well, young people are doing quite well, really. It's just when they get up a little older that they fall in all these bad habits. So, anyway, that's it, Susie, for today.
Oh, thank you. Thanks
a lot. We just have about 3 minutes left, and there's a lot of things we could talk about. We didn't get into the online component, which we could probably spend an hour talking about alone. But I wanted to ask you to talk a little bit about the challenge of giving a presentation, because this is something I found really helpful or potentially helpful for myself in the future. When you're giving a presentation in front of a whole bunch of people that you've never met, how do you put yourself in a position to feel comfortable?
Well, the first thing, it's called How to Work an Audience. The first thing is, A, you should know what you're talking about. Me, not memorizing every word, but know the keywords and the concepts. And C, if you talk to your audience before you get on stage, they are going to treat you as a person, not as a presenter. You will feel more comfortable because you have acted, as comedians call it, you'll have been your own warm-up act. So if you use some of the ideas that I put forth in the book to greet your audience, you know, introduce yourself as you see them being seated, you're going to find that they're going to be more on your side, and that's going to make you more comfortable talking with them. And never do what the old-fashioned rule was. I don't think I was taught this at Illinois, but don't look over people's heads when you give a talk. It's really about connecting with your audience as well. What you do is you look at people in the audience, in each section of the audience, and you make eye contact with as many people as possible, but keep your eye contact for at least like 30 seconds. That way you're going to get the visual feedback from the audience that's going to make you more comfortable. But you do have to know your material, but you know what? Audiences are very forgiving when, A, we're not boring, but, B, when they feel connected to us. And you can do that ahead of time by just talking to different people in the audience.
So you recommend going around the room and actually introducing yourself?
I do that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'll see. I know they're coming in, and I'm the speaker. I'll say, oh, hi, I'm Susan Rand. Oh, and if they have a name tag, oh, you're from so-and-so. Oh, wow, I don't think I know exactly where that is. I'm not very good in geography, this is not a lie. This is true. And they'll say to me, well, it's this city and it's near Champaign, or it's this city and it's near, you know, Lafayette, Indiana. And then we started a conversation. But I'm going to give a tip about the speaking. Always find out from whoever asked you to speak what the goals are or the objectives are for your presentation, because then you'll have a clear sense of what they expect you to do. And I've always found, as a speaker, I have a pre-programmed questionnaire on my website. By the way, I'm happy if anyone wants to come to my website and take a look at that pre-programmed questionnaire, something they might want to send out similar to wherever they're going to speak, they can come to my website and just take a look at it and even, you know, borrow it and adapt it. It's www.howtoworkaroom.com, and you can hit the meeting planner button and you'll find it there. Also, you can come there and take the schmooze quotient quiz.
That's really entertaining. I like that a lot. And I was going to mention the website. We're almost out of time, so it's just simply www.howtoworkaroom.com.
Yes, and you know, and I just want to say to our people in the Champaign-Urbana area that I'm delighted to say the bookstores there all carry How to Work a Room. And I know one of your sponsors, Pages for the Ages.
Pages for All Ages.
Pages for All Ages, which is an independent bookstore, and we really want to support independent bookstores, as well as the, I guess it's the Illini, the campus bookstore, and Borders and Barnes & Noble all have How to Work a Room. But we all really want to support independent bookstores.
Good. Well, we'll have to leave it there since we're out of time. And I just want to say thanks so much for talking with us. It's been very interesting. And hope to have a chance to talk again.
I would like that. Well, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy Hanukkah, and whatever. Have a good holiday.
Thanks, you too.